You know, I think we should lead in and say that Jay is absent this evening. He's on vacation with his family.
Right.
Sitting on a beach that Alan didn't realize that Massachusetts was up against the ocean.
I knew it was. I just didn't, you know.
Oh, is it because it's northern?
Yeah, you don't think of...
And you're like, oh, you don't have beaches up there.
Well, no, not one you'd want to sit on.
Well, it's we have beaches and sunshine sometimes.
I guess you know the time you can enjoy a beach is so short. But we have a stand-in.
We do.
You know, we've been harassing people to, you know, if you want to be on the show, let us know, because we want people to be on the show. And we had a listener say, hey, I'll step up. And so we have, do you want to give your last name or just first name? How do you want to?
Well, just call me John.
Okay. It's John, the listener. And I believe, I'm pretty sure were you actually on the Vicious Circle at one point or?
Twice actually.
Yeah. I remembered your Skype name.
Yeah. There was the first time was mostly technical difficulties.
That pretty much describes every episode of that show.
You're going to have to be more specific.
So I run Linux on all my systems. I don't have a Windows computer. And there at that time, there was a Linux client for Skype, but it didn't really interface with the audio card in my computer very well. And I sounded kind of demonic, as I recall. Oh. You described it as like Bit Crusher or something like that.
Nice. All right.
The first time around. The second time around worked a little better.
Awesome. Well, we're glad to have you.
Yeah. All right. I'm glad to be here.
And we got, I don't know, as usual, we circulate topics amongst ourselves in case we run out of stuff to talk about naturally.
Right.
But we have somebody new to talk to now. So
yeah.
I was thinking this evening, I was thinking, you know, we should maybe like kind of rename these shows, as we can do like interviews with introverts.
Yeah, that's pretty much what it turns out to be.
You know, Alan and I are pretty introverted, but we like to talk to people and we like to hear your stories and, you know, learn about new stuff. And I think the best way to do that is just have like random people on and join us and talk to us about stuff that you know that we don't know.
And I think we're all introverts joined by the magic of the internet.
Yeah, thank God for the internet. I would have no friends whatsoever.
As I recall, both Alan and I are both INTJs, and I don't remember.
I am also an INTJ.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. At least like 90% of the time when I take those tests, I'm an INTJ.
Yeah.
Sometimes I'm like the other one, INT, whatever the other one is. I don't know.
F. Or F. Feeling?
Yeah, it depends. Yeah. You know, it probably depends on like if I'm having PMS or something that day. But usually I'm INTJ. Yeah.
Oh.
I'm sorry.
Damn hormones.
Anyway, John, thanks for joining us. And we do have like topics to talk about this week, you know, news kind of topics. But I think that you're kind of more interesting.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I don't see myself as interesting, but I guess if you look at the dossier of my life, there's a lot of interesting kind of content there.
When you emailed us with your kind of dossier of your life and yourself, were you kind of impressed with like, hey, that's actually kind of pretty cool?
So, yeah, I kind of on that subject, like I said in my email, I just switched employers.
Right.
And kind of the past year, I've been sort of having to learn kind of skills, you know, talking about my own self and my own accomplishments, which is really unusual for me. In my last job, I was put into leadership position, and then, you know, all kinds of things that require kind of introspection.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized that every year when like we're kind of forced to go through like self reviews of what we've done over the years. I don't really keep a mental tally of my accomplishments. So every time I do it, it's like a forensic investigation into myself.
Right.
And so I've had a lot more practice doing that recently. So I'm getting a little better at it. So I just kind of dig up things about myself that, you know, if you ask me point blank, like me not being prepared, I would tell you I'm boring and I don't really have a lot to tell you about myself. But if I have a little bit of time to prepare, I can actually think of the interesting things about my life.
When you do those like self-reviews, like we all have to do, I have two comments on that. One is it's remarkably like the communist self-criticism thing.
Yeah, it is. They're looking for you to say, like, especially the question where you're like, what areas can you improve?
Right.
Well, you have to like temper what you're going to say there, because that is going to be the thing that's on your goals the next year around, you know?
But
so you have to like,
do you do what I do, which is like go back and like mine your email for the last year? What the hell did I do? I don't even remember.
Yes, exactly. In fact, I'm one of those like people who collects everything and stores it away.
Yeah.
Like a squirrel, I guess you could call me. So like my last job, I had all nine years worth of emails. Every email that I got, I filed away. And for most of that, I have like I set server side filters, because corporate emails gets really insane the bigger the company gets. But yeah, I look through my emails, I check my sent messages, and then I like check for keywords and try to figure out what it was that I did that year, and end up like, yeah, I end up finding like 10 times as much stuff as I realized that I did.
Wow, I did a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah, but if they, you know, if they sat you down cold and said, all right, now tell us everything you did, you'd be like,
Exactly, yeah.
I did some stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Are we supposed to keep lists of things we do? Because I'm running up against, I'm a manager of people now, and then also we're doing the self-review type. We're doing the 360 review where my employees review me and I review them, and it's a whole big thing. And do normal people usually keep lists?
I think they do.
Okay.
So one of the things, a couple managers ago at the last job, he kind of put together sort of a worksheet for you to like just kind of keep up with over the years, and had categories of stuff, so that, because you're supposed to meet all these different, you know, requirements and your goals. So he gave us a sheet that was like on a wiki, only accessible to you and your manager, so that you could like log stuff before you forgot it, so that you'd have something to do at the end of the year without, you know, spending an entire day like just digging up dirt about yourself, you know?
Right.
Nice. But yeah, people do that. I guess it's not in my nature. It's not in my nature to like, you know, self-promote. I don't toot my own horn. My kind of philosophy is that my work and my actions should speak for themselves.
Mm-hmm. So wow, you're like one of us.
Yeah. So yeah, it's difficult for me to do that, and it's something I've had to like really practice over about the past year to get sort of adequate at.
Yeah, in fact, the company you work for now, which shall not be mentioned, is actually kind of funny, because the company I work for that shall not be mentioned actually bought a piece of your company that shall not be mentioned last year.
Oh.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I just had a meeting with representatives of your company that shall not be mentioned like yesterday.
Yeah, it's a small world.
That's funny.
Mm-hmm.
Y'all aren't coming for the library yet, are you?
No.
Okay. Nobody wants that.
Yeah, that's
time's up.
Yeah, I know. So it is. That was weird. Yeah, the library. We can talk about libraries.
Or not.
Or not.
Well, once somebody figures out how to monetize idle hobo time, then, you know.
Oh, man. I tell you what, I'm giving up.
Brita would be the next Mark Zuckerberg if you could monetize hobo time.
Yeah. I'm starting to describe my job as like, there's not much reference anymore going on in the libraries because everybody feels like, oh, I can just Google it. Okay. Yeah, you can, but you know, it doesn't say you're going to get the right answers. But most of the time, my job is just helping people who are computer illiterate print things off from the internet. Mostly pay stubs, which I still have not solved the mystery. We, you know, twice a month, we get an influx of people coming in needing to print off pay stubs and fax their pay stubs. And I can't figure out what's going on.
What's amazing to me is they're logging into their, at the very least, their ADP account on a public.
No, there is no, there is no sense of like, oh, I need to keep myself, you know, secure on the internet.
There are so many layers of spyware on those public systems.
Oh, I'm sure, you know, and not to mention like all the people that just leave their email just open and sitting there.
My
email got hacked. I think it happened to the library. Well, did you log out?
It's actually frightening how cavalier
how do I log out?
Most people are with that stuff. It's just, it makes me cringe. And
you know what? I want all the listeners, go to your library. Go to your public library, your nearby lovely public library. Go to the library and talk to your reference librarian and actually have her answer a question for you. And like do reference for you because you will make her damn month probably.
she'll be all excited. Somebody asked me a question. I had to spend time. I had to spend time and doing the research. It was amazing.
I had to do the research. Yeah. So check out a book. Talk to your librarian. Have her solve a problem for you.
Yeah. That one thing you've always wanted to know and didn't bother to look up.
I don't know. Anyway,
but don't argue with them about whether or not Portuguese are white people.
Oh my God. I've been having this time on the internet with people who are insisting that people from Portugal are Hispanic or Latino, and they are not. Number one, Hispanic denotes Spanish speakers from Europe. People from Portugal speak Portuguese. Number two, Latino refers to Western Hemisphere. Portugal is in Europe, which is not in the Western Hemisphere. I don't know. And every Portuguese person that you probably would speak to would say, no, we're European, we are white, we are not Hispanic. So I'm going with that. Wow, John.
Yeah.
if you're playing the child scream drinking game, you're probably pretty sloshed right now.
That's amazing. Are they killing each other or is this just
that's not that sort of scream.
It's wow.
This is like somebody got something away from me or whatever.
God bless you.
They're supposed to be getting ready for bed right now.
Oh, that's the worst.
Yeah.
Oh my God, it sounds like sirens. Like ambulance sirens.
They actually have their own noise for siren emulation, and it's more annoying than that.
Oh my God.
You know, it's funny now that you mentioned that, Brita, I just had a thought that, you know, the siren noise is probably the way it is because it tunes us in viscerally to that child scream that we're biologically programmed to pay attention to.
Well, that's why cats meow the way they meow is because they try, you know, some sort of evolution thing. They've learned that, oh, the humans respond to a certain type of meow that sounds exactly like a baby crying.
Oh, yeah.
That's why European sirens.
I run into a problem where there will be kids outside and I will hear the kid outside and I'll be like, oh, my God, what's wrong with the cat? And it's a kid. It's not the cat. So, yeah.
That's what happens.
Generally speaking, my children, I am told, are remarkably well behaved.
Well, they're awfully cute, I have to say. I love all your photos of them where you do your little adventures outside.
Yeah.
Mud puddles and all sorts of things. They're really just charming and sweet.
Yeah, my daughter, my middle daughter, she's 3. She just turned 3 in July. Has taken to fishing.
Nice.
We've got 15 acres where I live.
Mm-hmm.
House and 15 acres. Most of it is woods, trees, oak trees, post oak and blackjack oak. So someday when I get the time and don't have very small children, I'm going to build a pit for barbecue. And
yeah, it was post oak. That's perfect.
I've got all the post oak that I would ever need. I could never run out because about 13 acres of my property is just trees.
Hmm.
I've got about a third of an acre of water, and it's an old stock tank, and it's stocked with largemouth bass and bluegill. So the kids like fishing. My 3-year-old has really kind of taken to it in the past month or so. She gets very excited to go fishing.
Cool.
And she loves to hold the fish after they're caught and tell me how much she loves the fish. Pet it, and you know.
And then do you put the fish back or no?
Yeah.
Oh,
generally speaking.
Yeah.
My wife is not a fish eater, so.
Oh.
Unfortunately. So I haven't really done any catch and cook yet. Someday I will, but too many things, too many irons in the fire with all the kids right now.
Sure.
So.
Yeah.
Oh man, the best fish I ever ate was like cooked in a frying pan like 5 minutes after it was alive in the water.
Oh yeah, that's from what I understand, that's the best way to do largemouth bass.
Yeah, oh,
as fresh as you can get them, and the flavor is really good when they're new.
It makes me suspect that fish like start going bad the minute they die. I mean, you know, like red meat. You know, you got time, and in fact, a lot of it's better after it's aged a little bit. But right. I think fish starts going bad the minute it's coming out of the water. There's just something about it because I mean that when it's that fresh and that it really is a different thing from like when you buy it at the store or something. It's completely different.
Sure. Yeah.
What is the quote from Doctor Who about life is just nature's way of keeping meat fresh or something?
Oh yeah.
Does anybody remember that?
I remember that. Yeah.
It just always sticks in my head, and I can't. Of course, I can't. Oh, life is just nature's way of keeping meat fresh.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Perfect.
You know.
Yeah. There you go. I love that quote. Do you watch Doctor Who, John?
So, not currently.
Well, it's
what
not
are your
on
what
currently.
Are your feelings on the new Doctor being female?
Yeah, they can do whatever they want. It's their show.
Yeah.
I haven't really watched it, so I don't really have kind of an opinion to work there. It really depends on if it was like a PC choice or if it was actually
that's my concern.
The skill of the actor.
Yeah, if they do it well and if the writing's good, I don't really care who it is.
Yeah. I care about people doing their best at what they do for a living.
Mm-hmm.
That's my judgment of people in general that I work with has nothing to do with personal opinions. It has to do with their work ethic and what their actions are.
Oh, I bet people hate you.
I don't fit in the new. So my previous company has gone down this rabbit hole of like inclusiveness for every single possible thing you could ever think of, and they expend enormous amounts of effort and time pumping into like these programs that I just want to do my job, you know, and I don't mind helping you know any particular group if there's you know. There's a way that you can help people be part of a world in a better way. But when you just start including people just because they check a box is what really bothers me, especially when your company is not doing as well as it should. And you're expending a lot of effort and time and money on just kind of this PC sort of quota that the tech industry has been sort of given.
Yeah, that's a problem in a lot of places. It's I think it's self-correcting given enough time, because the companies that do that inevitably will not fare as well as the ones who concentrate on doing business. I mean, there's a difference between being a jerk and you know, it always comes back to the old argument about racism and stuff like that. And there was the idea that, oh, capitalists are all racist and blah, blah, blah. And they won't hire black people, or they won't hire women and stuff like that.
Those demographics don't make up a lot of the labor pool. You can't just imagine somebody being qualified for what your business does.
Right. And if somebody, no matter what their race or sex or orientation or whatever, if they're competent and good and they can do the job, you'd be a fool not to hire them.
Sure. Absolutely.
And I think the companies that engage in this faux thing, it's just like the colleges that go out and admit people based on a quota, and they go out and they get student loans, and because of their academic standards, they're doomed to failure. I think it's fraud in a lot of ways, because the university is telling this person, hey, yeah, we've admitted you to the university, you're going to get a degree, when they have no hope of getting a degree because they're not prepared and they can't do what's required to fulfill the needs of earning the degree. And so they go to school for a few years, they drop out, and they owe $100,000 in student loans. They cannot be discharged in bankruptcy.
Yeah, it's the world of shortcuts, and it's kind of like the whole progressive mentality is kind of wrapped around that. You deserve what you have because of what you are instead of what you've done. And so, yeah, you can't shortcut, hard work and competency.
I don't know. We had a whole 8 years of Obama based on that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that worked out well, didn't it?
Mm-hmm. He voted present for as long as he was in the Senate, right?
So yeah.
What's amazed me about Trump, and who turned out far, far better than I ever expected, and I didn't expect much, honestly. But the fun thing about Trump is watching him do everything that everybody has said cannot be done.
Yeah.
Because, you can't do that. Oh, you can't do that. And then he does it, and they're like, oh, this is going to be a disaster. And then, oh, look, it's like there's this like mindset of, I guess these people are steeped in, go along to get along or something, and they can't even imagine, doing things, in a competent, bold fashion, and it's funny because, real estate, and I'm not, by no means am I a real estate expert, but that's, building shit is pretty cut and dry. It either gets built and it stands up, or it doesn't get built and it falls down. And you can't, unlike a lot of government programs, you can't paper that over with bullshit.
Yeah.
If you build a building that collapses,
you can't massage those numbers.
Right. Yeah. It's like that walkway that collapsed. That's engineering. You can't. It either works or it doesn't work. You're not. Which is the problem with all these government programs, because they create something and they give it a fancy name and they say, oh yes, this is going to do X. Well, it doesn't matter if it does X or not, because the intent was to proclaim you were going to do it and look like you were doing mm-hmm. something, and then you go off and who cares? There's no reality to it. So anyway,
that extends to upper management in the corporate world as well.
Yep.
I've found. Yeah. I don't like him as a person personally.
No.
But like I said, you know, your work is really what I judge you by, not by, you know, my personal opinion of you. I remember prior to him even getting into the presidential, you know, the thing where you elect people. the word has escaped me.
The primary, the election, the campaign.
The running, I guess. Running? Yeah.
Yeah.
Campaign. Right. I remember my wife and I were watching his show, the Celebrity Apprentice, and mm-hmm. was the country guy that does all the commercials that was on that.
I've never seen it. I don't know.
Well, they were like doing their little pitch thing in the show for like a commercial, and I don't know, it was some food product, maybe. I don't remember exactly, but the pitch was in the tune to La Cucaracha. And I remember Donald Trump sitting there and berating him for using a copyrighted material. How are you going to pay for that? That's copyrighted. And then I'm sitting there yelling at the screen saying, that's a 19th century folk song. It is in the public domain. But he was so sure of himself. And he just like dressed down like this guy that was doing the pitch to the point where he's like, oh, I wasn't going to use that, and just kind of start backing off. And then, as I recall, he kind of used that backing down from that position as kind of an excuse to fire him from that episode. And like he came off so like just bombastic and sure of himself without actually knowing the actual truth behind what he was saying. And so since that time, I really that sort of person really gets under my skin. So as a person, I don't like him, but what he has done, I've actually been impressed by.
Yeah, I'm pretty much in the same situation. It's,
yeah.
It's no secret. I voted for Trump, and I voted for Trump because he wasn't Hillary Clinton. And that was the only
reason. Yeah, I didn't vote for either of them, but I had a protest vote. But
yeah. Well, I didn't feel like I was in a precinct that could afford a, you know, it was.
Well,
know.
And I voted for Trump because, you know, being in Northeast Ohio, we, you know, our votes really, really matter, being right. A swing state and, you know, all that stuff. And honestly, I didn't know who I was going to vote for until I was standing there in the voting box. And I was like, I went in there thinking I'm going to vote Libertarian because I don't like either of them, you know. But I stood there and I really searched my conscience and I was like, okay, like if you vote Libertarian, that is a vote, you know, for Hillary in this, you know, in this area, it's throwing away a vote that could, you know, sink Hillary. And I stood there for a long time and I was like, all right, well, we're going to do it. And I kind of felt sick after I did it. I was like, oh my God, I just voted for Donald Trump. Like, come on, Donald Trump.
I didn't have so much of a dilemma as maybe either of you did. While I work in Austin and I live near Austin, Austin is its own little pool of blue, but surrounded mm-hmm. by red. I live in that area, so there was no like real risk of my vote making any sort of difference there.
Do you live in one of those counties where they don't even bother running Democrats anymore for most offices?
They do most of the time, but there are some that don't run. Austin is expanding eastward towards my direction, and so yeah. I lived in Austin nearly all of my life, up until it came time to, you know, like buy a house and have kids, and the city is so hard, difficult to live in. Especially on like a budget, you know.
Mm-hmm.
We were living in an apartment that was built in like the 60s, and we were in one of the few remaining unrefurbished units in there, and we were paying like $900 a month for like a 2-bedroom. And as soon as they reworked them, that size of apartment was going up to like $1,400, which is,
oh, wow,
funny enough, now is affordable for that area. But we were looking around at houses and, you know, for what we were wanting to budget, it was completely impossible. And even like a small lot with like a small, like 2-1 house on it was going for like $250,000-$300,000.
Oh yeah, Austin's and insane. It's just,
it is ridiculous. So we found a place, you know, it's about 25 miles out of town or so. Far enough to where like it's away from everything, and we're not even near a town. We're a few miles from it, the closest town. So we're actually out in the country. Mm-hmm. And my closest neighbor is probably about 500 feet away from my house. But we came out here, and Austin's moving this way, and like my property taxes have gone up so much since we moved out here 5 years ago. I don't remember how I got on that subject. Where did that tangent come from?
We don't know. We're not paying attention.
Oh, no, we were talking about voting and we were talking about Austin, and all that kind of stuff.
So Austin is moving this way. Well, the Austin influence anyway is moving this way. And so, you know, it's not nearly as red. And you know, that doesn't really bother me so much. I don't, like I said, I judge people on their actions, not really anything else. So, you know, Texas Democrats are often very much different than you would find Democrats in other parts of the country. But Austin is moving this way, and I'm before my kids are grown, I'm betting we're going to have to sell our place and find something else, just because development will push this far that it'll become untenable to live kind of the lifestyle that we've been enjoying out here, being away from all of that.
Yeah, now, I notice that John does not have any sort of like Southern accent. And is that because of Austin?
I hear that sometimes. Southern and Texas are two different things.
Okay.
Like I said, I grew up in Austin, so the Texas accent, well, Texas has like five different kind of regional accents. It's not just a single thing. Listening to somebody talk, I could generally tell you which part of the state they're from.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's like variances in the accent, but Austin has less of the Texas accent influence, but I feel like I have some, but yeah, I hear that kind of from people. I think people have been conditioned by like TV and movies and whatnot that they think, you know, Texas accent is Georgia accent is whatever, you know? So,
Rita's used to listening to me, which is not in Texas either. So,
yeah.
Well, but we've had other Texans on the show and they have more distinct.
Well, like John was saying, there's different regions of Texas have different accents. Austin is one of those cities that has a lot of people. It's more of a melting pot sort of thing. It's mm-hmm. not
right.
Sure.
Austin historically, prior to the tech boom, was a college town, and there was a military base here, which is how I ended up.
Right.
Yeah, you said you were born overseas, right?
Yeah, I was born in the Philippines.
Mm-hmm.
My dad was stationed at Clark Air Force Base there. So that's the place I was born. Funny enough, Texas is it's in competition as probably the most temperate place I've lived in my life. if you can believe that.
Which is funny because, you know, it's.
Well, so it's kind of a toss-up between here and when we were in Georgia. Now, Texas is hotter, but compared to where I am, it's way soupier. It's more like Houston in a lot of Georgia.
Oh yeah,
from the humidity, it's just kind of soupy. So it gets hotter here in the Austin area, but it's way more humid in Georgia. So it's kind of a toss up between those two as to which you think is the most mild.
I'd take the heat over the humidity. That's one of the things I hate about Houston is the humidity. And you get that basically from I want to say just west of Houston all the way to like Florida, that whole south thing is insanely humid, and it's I remember because I grew I moved to Dallas when I was in like elementary school, and we lived there for a long time, and Dallas is not that humid, not like Houston, but I remember going to visit family in like Arkansas and being like, oh my God, it's humid. And
little did you know.
Yeah, I know. Now I live in a house and I run two dehumidifiers just to keep the humidity below 50% on a regular basis. It's awful.
My wife is from Houston and she's still got a lot of family down there.
So you venture into the swamp every now and then?
Yeah, her parents actually have a beach house on Boulevard. There was a new construction in the past like year and a half after everything went down. The thing is on stilts that are like 20 feet tall. It's way up there. Like the Boulevard, that whole area, they've upped the codes on height.
Well, I bet they did after
storm surges and all that. Yeah.
Yeah, it got wiped out pretty good with the Katrina.
Yeah, it got swept pretty clean.
Was it Ike?
I don't remember. Or was it Harvey?
No, it wasn't Harvey. Harvey was further south. We just got rain from Harvey.
Yeah, we got rain from Harvey, too, all the way up here. Mm-hmm. I think in 2 days it was, it was a lot. It was like a foot and a half or more of rain, even all the way up here.
Yeah. Crazy. You know, what's funny is I like to, because Brita lives near Cleveland, which is, you know, basically on a lake that might as well be an ocean.
Yeah, it's a big lake.
And so she has all the same coastal problems that I do.
Yeah, we kind of do. We have pretty extreme humidity and.
Yeah, humidity and the rain and, you get the lake effect snow, which I don't get, but. If we get the next ice age and the glaciers make it down here, it's going to be miserable. I don't think they would. They never have. But anyway.
I think you're safe from glaciers.
So, John, you mentioned that you do a lot of competition shooting, or do you just do your own?
I don't do a lot. I've kind of dabbled in it. I think I mentioned there was a running gun last year. It's called the Pecos Running Gun. It's basically kind of like a 10K, with a pack and rifles in the mountains and in desert. It's in Pecos County, I believe.
That does not sound like fun.
Wait, no.
Yeah.
So 10K with guns
and a pack.
What? Guns and ammo and all the water that you're going to need and anything else that you need to bring with you. So the story about that is I didn't make it to the running gun. I loaded up my truck and got about 2/3 of the way out there and busted a radiator hose going 80 on I-10.
Oops.
Or 85, whatever the speed limit is. I think it's 80 out there. Where the speed limit is. I picked something from the road, jumped up and slashed my radiator hose. And as you can imagine, the water dumps out pretty quickly when you're going 80, when the motor's running that quick. So I was kind of out in the middle of nowhere, and where I pulled off, you couldn't even really see me from the interstate. It was kind of like an exit that went to like a town of 20 people or whatever. Luckily, I had like 3 days worth of camping gear with me, because for the running gun, most people camp out there the night prior and the night following. Prior and after the running gun, because they have like camping area, so it's primitive camping. There's nothing fancy, but I had enough water for that whole time. I had enough food for all that time. And, chairs, tents, whatever, a shower, mm-hmm. like a little battery opera shower that you can dip in a bucket and shower yourself with. So it was kind of lucky because cell signal out that area on I-10 is pretty patchy. Had it been like 5 miles prior, I wouldn't have had signal and I would have been just kind of stuck out there until somebody came and found me. But my dad, I called my dad and he ended up coming out and helping me out. But unfortunately, I didn't get to make the running gun, and I'm not on the, I didn't, the, with all the children and everything, I didn't really have Kevin in the cards, and the job change as well. I didn't really have in the cards to do it this year, but next year.
Next year.
I like outdoor hiking, backpacking sort of stuff. So
is it, it's in 10, my wheelhouse. Is it a 10K run or a hike?
It can be whatever you want. It's a competition. So it's basically five to six miles with stops along the way.
Oh, I see.
So there's like five or six shooting stations. So it's you're judged by your hits and you're judged by your run time.
So it's like the desert version of that thing where they ski and shoot.
Yeah, it's a desert, but yeah, it's center fire. It's not 22. You have to run a center fire rifle.
The biathlon
and a handgun.
Yeah, the biathlon.
Yeah, it's a center fire biathlon basically in the desert.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah, it's I've a bunch of my old coworkers from the last place have done it, and it was really interesting. I had the opportunity to do it last year and ended up missing it just because my truck busted. But next year I have plans to do it.
Well, I hope you do because I want to hear about it.
Yeah, I was I was debating because the ranges go out to 300 or 400 yards depending on the course.
Mm-hmm.
So I was debating taking my 458 SOCOM just to say that I did it. But that particular rifle of mine is not lightweight. And yeah, doing 10K with it on your back is a little much, as well as ammo weighs a few times what, 223 would.
Is that what a lot of people carry, like a lightweight 223,
ARs are pretty common. And yeah, I may build just like a lightweight AR. I have plans for like a 6.5 Grendel as well. I may run that if I get that built by the time next year rolls around. The competition is in September. So it's pretty warm out there. So minimizing your weight is a good thing.
Yeah, I would think. Yeah. That's interesting. It didn't sound like, cause I was, it sounded like running. Cause every time somebody says, oh, a 10K, it's like running. I guess some people would run, but I can't imagine like running up to some stage where you have to shoot and then going, let me go hold the gun steady and
right. And you're on a timer, you're on a time limit at the station. So, it's kind of like a finding the balance between the two. And some of the people who score best don't run at all. They just basically hike it
slow and steady
because slow and steady. And their shots are on because of that.
Interesting. I didn't know they did these things. That's
I didn't either.
Yeah, there's several in this area. There's one out in the Davis Mountains as well, kind of near Balmoray.
Are we approaching because of the internet and because people have such weird interests and can gather and find each other and stuff? Are we approaching the point where we have like a Rule 34 sort of thing for odd interests?
Maybe,
you know, like,
I don't know if running and gunning is really that odd. It's kind of a common sort of exercise for people who do marksmanship training, especially in the military. You have your sniper programs that's specifically what they do is, they do, distance moving along with, shooting. There's also competitions that do like kind of go to much more extremes, where it's like a 2-day thing that they do over like, 20 miles, and they have waypoints that they have to meet and then shoot targets.
I would be concerned about making it to the end.
Yeah. It's an interesting idea to me. I kind of want to get my feet wet in the shorter running guns before I did something like that. Most of those sort of people that do the long distance ones have bolt action, like pretty accurate bolt actions and like distance calibers, basically.
Like a lightweight 30-06 or six or 308.
More like 300 Win Mag, something that's like really much flat, something than flat, traditional stuff.
Okay. Interesting. Man, I just had the thought of a lightweight 700. Ouch. Breeder would probably like.
Yeah.
What?
A lightweight 700 Magnum. That would.
No, I don't think so.
You like the recoil.
Well, I know, but maybe not that much. I don't know. this is totally like I'm skipping around on topics, but
sure.
John, in your email, you said something that I just thought was wow.
I think I know what this is.
Yeah, you lived in a vegan co-op.
Yeah.
Like, what?
Yes, for about 2.5 years.
And how did that occur? Like, was there a girl involved?
No, actually, there was not.
Because I would think, like, you know, that would be the only thing that would get me there. Not a girl, but, like, you know, true love would.
Well, so you have to understand, I've lived and grown up in Austin.
Right.
There's a pretty interesting cross-section of people who live in Austin.
Mm-hmm.
So my friends and the groups that I hung out with were kind of varied. I think I guess it was cheap. It's a housing cooperative. That particular organization is a housing cooperative for students. They're actually a 501(c). And so it's affordable student housing is basically what it is. And they're situated in the West Campus area of University of Texas, which that is impossibly expensive real estate, especially these days. But because they're 501(c) and they're the right kind of 501(c), they don't have to pay property taxes, which is how they can stay alive over there. So the house that I was in is 21 rooms. Three stories, and I think maximum capacity was like 31 or 32 people.
That's a big house.
Yeah,
it's compared to some of the co-ops down there. It's not all that big. There are actually a number of housing co-ops down there. There are a few organizations that do them. The organization that kind of ran and governed my house is a little more hippie, I guess you might call them. Ours was the only so the house that I lived in was the only one in that organization that was actually vegan. Vegan with vegetarian option was the official policy there. You could not have meat in the house at all.
Wow.
So the cross-section of friends that I had during that time, I was kind of active with the 2600 groups in Austin. So within those groups, there were some people that were kind of connected to the housing co-ops. And so that's kind of how I sort of got involved, and I needed a place to stay, and it was cheap to live there. It's an interesting way to live.
Mm-hmm.
About 2 years is probably about as much as anybody really does, save for the few oddballs. There are a couple people that I know that have lived in housing co-ops for a decade and a half, and I don't know how they can live like that, at least in a housing co-op. Austin has a bunch of housing co-ops that are adult co-ops as well, which are a little different, but they all sort of kind of lean the same way politically and ideologically. So I needed a place to stay, and I knew some people in that organization, and there was a room available. And so I went there. It's an interesting way to live, because it's cheap, but you also have to like contribute labor wise.
Okay.
And it's also, at least in that sort of situation, is a demonstration of why socialism doesn't work most of the time.
Yes. Because somebody always ends up doing all the laundry, right?
Yeah. So
cleaning the kitchen all the time, and then there's some lazy guy who doesn't help.
Yeah. And it becomes like a, you kind of have like a, what, trying to address those people, you have to have enough people who are willing to do the work the right way in order to like address those issues or kick people out of the cooperative.
Mm-hmm.
For not doing what they agreed to, they signed up to do. But it rarely happens. It rarely goes to that extent. And a lot of it is because it's basically college kids.
Right.
Yeah. So, yeah, I lived at a vegan co-op. I learned how to cook for 30 people on a budget of like $20 vegan and tasting good.
Wow.
Beans and rice.
So
no.
No beans and rice? Wait, I need to
beans
know.
Beans and rice were sometimes a part of the dinners, but it's much more elaborate than that.
Hmm.
One time I made vegan puff pastry by hand. And made basically kind of like a mushroom gravy pocket, like with a bunch of mushrooms in it in like a brown gravy.
What did you vegan. Use for the fat in the puff pastry?
There is a butter alternative called Earth Balance.
I've seen it in the
works
store.
Works remarkably well to substitute for butter in a lot of recipes. But it was, 5 hours of like rolling out,
yeah,
freezing. It took a long, long time to make that stuff.
Yeah, wow.
But it turned out nice. The puff pastry was nice and flaky, and yeah.
So do you cook a lot?
Not as much as I used to, but I still do cook. I have 3 kids and I have a daytime job, so largely my wife cooks. But I especially on the weekends, I do like breakfast, and I have pancakes, a pancake recipe that is quite popular in our household. Breakfast tacos. I also make usually on Saturdays.
Yum.
Yeah, this is Austin breakfast tacos. The rest of the country doesn't really know these sorts of tacos, generally speaking.
What's in an Austin?
California print. Well, it's the sort of the way they're prepared. Breakfast tacos almost universally have eggs of some sort, but bacon, egg, cheese. My wife doesn't like eggs, so we also make potatoes, and that kind of stands in for her eggs. And generally a salsa of some sort. There's a taco place here that I actually buy the salsa from because I like it so much.
I would like to have a contest between you and Jay who can eat the hotter salsa.
Okay.
Because you said you love really, really hot food, right?
Yeah. That actually also stems from my days with the 2600 kids. There was an organized group of like techie people, which included some of the 2600 group. For those of you who don't know what 2600 is, it's a hacker magazine, and they're kind of like semi-organized meetings just run by people, not formally by any specific organization. And they've been going on since the 80s. But if you ever watched the movie Hackers, if you remember the scene in like the weird place where they did all the rollerblading and the video games,
mm-hmm.
there's a scene where they're all sitting around a table talking about like the books and the their exploits and whatever. That is a 2600 meeting right there.
I remember those days.
And I know it because Emmanuel Goldstein, who is the guy who runs, this is his pseudonym, and the guy who runs 2600 the magazine, consulted on that movie. And they got the meeting like down to a T. It's totally, totally like a 2600 meeting.
And then they totally screwed up the rest of it.
Oh yeah, like DTMF tones instead of the F. Yeah. Like somebody was going to record the tones off the movie and make phone calls or something.
I know. It's crazy.
So anyhow, from that group, what subject was I on? Oh, spicy. Right. Yeah. From that group, there's a, or at least there was, I think they still do South by Southwest. There's a group of like, tech people here in Austin who have been around for a long time. And one of them is like he used to be the webmaster for South by Southwest. Bunch of like local people who are fairly well known. One of the guys at his house, on a monthly basis would have what's called nuclear taco nights. Mm-hmm. And it was basically, ground beef tacos in shells. You know, I guess he had both shells and soft tortillas, with three kinds of habanero in them. And not a small amount either, including red Savinas, which is the hottest variety of habanero peppers. So, you know, 20-year-olds and their, you know, pride and spicy stuff and whatever.
I'll eat that.
The thing about spicy stuff is once you start eating it, you acclimate to it. And so once you like get yourself used to eating very, very spicy stuff, what you thought was spicy, like a year prior to that, it tastes like nothing to you. And so, I kind of through nuclear taco nights, kind of acclimated myself to eating really spicy stuff. And there is a restaurant in San Antonio, called Thai Chili. And when you go there, you order your food, they ask you for a grade of spiciness. And they do it by weight, it seems. They have to, because they're very, very consistent about like how spicy something is when you order your grade. Mm-hmm. But the normal scale is like 0 to 10, 0 with no spicy stuff in it, and 10 is like hot. But you can order above that scale. And if you get 100 or better, and eat all of your food, they will take your picture and put it on the wall.
I can't even imagine 100.
The first time you do it, it's a lot of work. Wow. In fact, the first time I went to that restaurant, I ordered an 11. It was difficult for me to eat. And then I started going to Nuclear Tacos, and I came back and I ordered a 50, and I was surprised at how mild it tasted. And so they asked me if I wanted to send it back and get it more spicy so that I could get on the wall. I said, okay. So they got me 100 and I finished that and got on the wall.
Wow.
And I got on the wall like three times. The spiciest I did was 250, I believe.
Holy crap.
There's a picture. Actually, they moved locations and I don't think they have the pictures up
anymore. What is the pepper of a 200?
So it's Thai chilies.
Okay.
In the Schofield, it's below habanero, but above like serrano and jalapeno.
Okay.
And it's also the amount of chilies they put in the dish, right?
Yeah, like a 250 includes like several whole Thai chilies that you have to eat also.
Oh, man. That's you go to a Thai restaurant, they're like, you know, you tell them that you want it hot, and a lot of Thai restaurants will say, do you want it Thai hot?
Yes. Yes. Well, and even when you tell them that, just because you're white, they will not do it in the same way they would do for someone else.
Right.
There are a couple of restaurants here in Austin that I don't frequent because they do that. But you know, I'm on the wall, or at least I was on the wall like four times there. And you know, we'd come down with the 2,600 kids. All of us would come down in like my van. And the chef that owned and ran the place would actually remember us and come out and talk to us.
Oh, it's you guys.
Yeah. That's funny. So,
have you tried the one chip challenge yet?
No,
challenges?
I feel like I saw that on YouTube, but I don't remember.
Oh, yeah, it was a big YouTube thing for a while, and it's literally the company sends you one corn chip. And
is it like ghost pepper?
I think it's ghost pepper.
Yeah.
I think it might be. I don't know. But I'm always so tempted just to order the one chip and send it to Jay and see how that goes.
Well, see, with my spicy stuff, I'm particular because a lot of people who make hot sauces will cheat and dump a bunch of vinegar in there to make it more spicy.
Mm-hmm.
But it just makes it bad for me.
Right.
White vinegar, I have like some strange sensitivity to it. So it, like, I can eat like super spicy stuff, but you put vinegar in it and like makes my lips swell up or something. It's strange. And it my stomach doesn't feel good after I've had anything with like a considerable amount of vinegar in it.
Right.
So I'm kind of particular about that sort of thing. Most habanero sauces, they cheat in that way. And also habanero peppers don't really have much flavor. Whereas something like Thai chilies or serranos or chili piquins have like a nice kind of, they have a body to them. Even jalapenos have their own specific flavor, but it's a lot more kind of green vegetable than a lot of the other chilies.
Right.
That was a cat. Sorry. Drink.
That was
drink.
That was Tig.
Speaking of drinks, we were going to talk about drink.
Yes. I want to hear about your quinoa whiskey.
Yeah. So, a friend of mine, one of my good friends, got married a couple years ago, and for his bachelor party, he wanted to drive to Nashville and do distillery tours.
Mm-hmm.
And so we went to a bunch of distilleries around Nashville, and one is called Corsair Distillery. Right. It's got a kind of a distinctive kind of bottle. It's like three dudes, and it's like kind of like a two-tone black and white sort of. Three dudes walking down an alleyway is basically what they said it was. So we tasted a bunch of stuff there, and they had a quinoa whiskey. And I tasted it, and I really liked it, so I bought some. And I've got about a third of the bottle left of it. But it's got a really interesting body. When you first taste it the first time, you'll know that it's quinoa, because quinoa has that distinctive sort of flavor to it.
Yeah, that kind of nutty flavor.
Yeah, so it's got that in it, but like the finish is almost like a saltwater taffy.
Oh, wow.
It's really kind of round and smooth and a little bit sweet.
Huh.
Wow, what is going
Sorry.
On
with it's, Ty? It's dinner time.
Holy.
Yeah. He is the new cat drink, so...
So that is what I'm drinking tonight, is quinoa whiskey.
Somebody feed that cat.
He's sorry. I'll put myself on mute.
No, don't. We like hearing the cat.
So we're about out of time, though.
Oh, wow. We are. Look at that.
We sure are.
Holy moly. You know what? We didn't talk about any of our damn topics.
Yeah, that's all right. You know what? I think everybody's sick of the news.
Yeah, I know.
You know, especially if you have any sort of presence on Facebook, it's like politics all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And it's exhausting. And I think, you know, changing the topic once in a while is probably a good thing for everybody.
Yes.
Next time you're down here, Brita, we have to do barbecue.
I would love that. I've never been in the Austin area.
Really?
Really.
Wow.
Well, Blacks in Lockhart is
Lockhart,
kind of on the way to Austin, correct?
It's between Austin and San Antonio, a little bit to the east, yeah.
Right.
Blacks is, in fact, my number one barbecue place in Texas.
It should be.
In the world.
You know? Mm-hmm.
Number two is actually not as far away from me. It's a place in Taylor. It's called Louis Mueller Barbecue.
Okay.
And it is very, very good. There's a place in Austin. There's a few places in Austin that are quite good as well. And we've sort of had this discussion in the groups as well.
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of barbecue places in Austin. A lot of them are good. Some of them are a little more overhyped than I think they deserve.
Yes.
Yes.
Uh-oh.
Uh-oh.
I don't even know if he's still recording or not. Are you there?
I guess he can't hear us, so he's probably not recording us. He's probably recording nothing.
Anyway. Thanks, John, for being on the show.
Sure. You're welcome.
And I hope you can come back and we can actually talk about, like, you know, news and politics and guns and more stuff.
Yeah.
Totally. Anything. It'd be good.
Sure.
So thanks a lot. And he's still struggling with this guy.
He's still trying to hear us. Maybe he has maybe he has our channels muted or something.
I don't know. If he lost connection, he probably lost the recording. Anyway,
yeah, probably.
I'm just gonna end it. And yeah, so thanks for hanging out.